Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Welcome to another episode of the Grim and Bloody Podcast. Glad to have you with us tonight, and we are talking about Chaser, which is releasing on April 12th. And representing the film, we have a full crew today. We have Russ Russo and Daniel DeWalden starring in Daniel Romer's film, who we've written and directed. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
By the way, it's a TV series.
TV series. Oh, yes. Yeah. Releasing. Yes. Yes. 8 episodes. Do I have it right?
Yes.
Yes, on YouTube.
It'll be on
Amazon and on demand.
Oh, Amazon on demand. Okay, perfect, perfect. Yep. So before we go into it, let me go introduce my co-host for tonight. Joe Flynn couldn't be with us tonight, but I do have Al Omega and one and only Kevin Nicholson. Welcome, guys.
Welcome. Yes, I want to say first of all, before we start, I want to say thanks to Mr. Daniel DeWalden, who kind of approached me and got this ball rolling, for us to do the show. So he was the one that approached me on Facebook Messenger, and we got this ball rolling. And he was able to bring along Daniel Romer and Russ Russo, I tell you, I've watched the first two episodes of this. I'll be watching some more tomorrow, and looking forward to talking about this.
Right. We got another podcast in the making then.
Yes. Yes.
Can we do a re-edit on this?
Careful on the re-edits, buddy.
I'm not sure. Only
if you get in a car accident, we can re-edit it.
Then we can
All right, I'll take the first question.
And Russ, stop trying to send me something from iCut, okay? Please don't. I'm not going to answer. Always. I'm not going to answer it. You know, I'm
already off the rails and been here 5 minutes.
That's right.
All right. Daniel Romer, talk to me about your inspiration behind Chasers. What got you into it? And tell me about a little bit about overview. We don't have to go nuts and bolts, but tell me a little bit about the production, how it went for you.
So yeah, it's always interesting to figure out where ideas come from. I think just going way back, I was always kind of fascinated with manipulation of time. And when I was a little kid, my dad filmed us on this Super 8 millimeter camera, and it was the winter. I grew up in Ohio, and we were ice skating as kids, and he would film us, and then when we go back home, he would play the film backwards and slow-mo it and stuff, and it blew my mind. And I think that always stuck in my head. And then it seems like the rest of my life, everything I make has some version of like editing time or rewinding reality or something like that.
See, that's
I didn't even know that, Daniel.
I wonder if that was like some form of child abuse, and now it's like now you're regurgitating it as an artist. he would make you watch movies backwards.
That's most artist childhood.
That's what I'm saying.
I would spin like, records backwards because they sounded cool, and sometimes you get a hidden message.
Yeah, when you. Ragnar. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, Daniel, let me ask you: when you was that kind of were you tinkering with the idea of what if we could re-edit our life? Were you tinkering with that? We have a mistake that we have happened in our life. What if we could redo it? And then you talk about in this Chaser. The consequences of that, because absolutely. if you redo it, well, what happens when you do redo it and it takes you down this other course that you didn't expect, and it's maybe not a scenario you like?
Exactly.
Talk a little bit about that.
The ripple effect, and the big question is, you know, messing around with the past, will the ripple effect of that create a worse result? Didn't do anything at all. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like the big question mark that we're hoping people ask and talk about. And I don't know. What do you think?
That's what I'm thinking, that it is that you're, you know, it's like to be careful what you wish for. You know, you wish you could have made this decision. Well, what happens if we did? What happens if you did make this decision? And then this whole other thing happens as a result that you didn't anticipate. I mean, that's what, kind of what drives me to it is Russ, Russ's character, is kind of this guy who is, he's kind of unprepared for what happens, you know, what happens next once he decides to, you know, to re-edit, and he's flung into this kind of, nightmarish, you know, nightmarish world. I loved your character, by the way, at least, you know, so far. You are like, you're kind of like, in a way, I know you're trying to portray it kind of as a nervous kind of maybe nebbishy kind of character, but you're like every person I've ever seen in real life when it comes to certain things. You're every bit the unsure of themselves, you know, how to react society and things like that. Did you have any kind of research that you did regarding that?
A lot of it's intuition. And then when we got on set, I met Daniel and he sort of took me through his world and who he is. And I think Daniel knows by now that I've taken sort of an interpretation of him toward this character. By now he must know that you know, in meeting him, it shaped the character somewhat. So I had something that I built initially, and by the way, I built him because Daniel wrote this wonderfully with like a stutter, and then when we got on set, he pulled back the stutter. So it's like you do all this preparation and then you find out, okay, I gotta pull this back. And when I pulled it back, I found myself inhabiting a lot of Daniel's qualities, and whether he knows it or not, and you know, certainly not everything, but you know, but it was like an interpretation, you know, and I thought that was a great way of going about it. Daniel was the one who showed me editing and got me to a place where I felt comfortable, you know, portraying that on screen. So that's where that came up with a lot of prep work and then Daniel's input.
I think that's the best form of flattery you can have on a set is the actors take such an ownership over the role because they feel connected to it, that they almost become the character and start exhibiting qualities that you didn't imagine. You know, the characters take root, they grow into their own characters from, you know, from page to screen. And then sometimes as a director, when I did my short films, sometimes there were little nuances that I never thought of until, you know, the actor got prepared and was on set and started. I'm like, wow, that's great what you're doing right there. I never even thought of doing it that way. That's perfect. It's just, it's an organic feel. And it's great, Daniel, that you allowed them that creative freedom to express themselves in the character, and hopefully, you know, the end result is something that you approved of.
He really did. Really did give us a lot of freedom in that way. I just don't know if he knew that I was taking some of his characteristics and imparting them over, you know, the beginning of us filming. Because we were on set for so long, you know, it was easy to kind of to sort of feel an energy transfer, and especially when it's a director and it's creator, you almost think, well, they're creating this for a reason, so there must be some part of him in this character. So anything that I prepared couldn't prepare me for going on set feeling Daniel's energy, feeling him out, and then
right.
pulling that into the character.
Off what you said, Russ.
Right.
I remember at the end of the shoot, I don't know if you remember this, but it was right after the rap party, and I think we went to what's the beer place? It wasn't Martini's, but it was the other one.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember this.
Yeah, we were there. I remember looking at Russ in the eyes, and yeah. he's like, gaze looked different. And I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Like, he almost looked like a different person a little bit, not like totally.
But we were wrapped, man. We were wrapped. So it was like you're already trying to shed the character a bit. And that's a fun thing to do, you know, is sort of like re-find yourself after so long being in the characteristics of someone else, being in the mentality, the thought process of someone else. I love that.
That's
I love having
thing.
Those, most, those moments.
Thing.
Yeah, so I really love that.
During the shoot, like, your main job as the director, your only job that no one else, there's no departments for anything else, is the actors. So you have to pay like super close attention to the subtleties. You have to listen. You got to make sure it's authentic. So like, I'm always like watching, you know, just the subtleties of everything. And I just remember in that bar, like something about Russ was different. I've never really seen that before in an actor. Like, usually I cast actors that like they are the part. Like, right. I just enjoy right. that because it feels supernatural and supernatural.
It's easier for you yes. and it's easier for them.
But I could tell yeah. Russ, right. he's not entirely Eddie himself. There was more layers that he was putting on, but I think that's what I saw kind of shift at the end there.
Because Russ doesn't have that many layers.
Yeah, yeah,
only as an actor.
Yeah, yeah, you have to peel away some of those. Yeah.
Well, you have to have layers to betray layers, don't you? Like,
Russ is a very complicated individual. Let me just tell you.
we've had a lot of fun over the last few years since we made yeah. this. So
we'll get to DeWeldon soon, don't worry.
Russ's real life is Bad Frank.
I don't know.
You think Eddie's soft, fun, light, smart, Bad Frank.
And then Bad Frank comes in.
So we get to Daniel, I wanted to ask you, Daniel, writer, director, about the length of Chaser, and talk a little bit, a little meta about TV series and ideas that maybe were originally pitched as feature films, you know, like 90-minute, two-hour feature films, and streaming services say, you know, this is a good idea. Can you stretch it into 8 episodes? So what I've noticed, I don't know if my associates, Kevin or Al, have noticed that really nice premises are being milked, you know, for the sake of watching, for time spent in the streaming platform. So the first few episodes, while good, you can tell that's the meat of the story. As you get to the end, you can start feeling it taper off where they were trying, maybe they ran out of premise. Tell me a little bit about Chaser. Was it always an episodic TV series? Did you always have that kind of length in mind when you were developing it?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's almost kind of like backwards, because our original concept was more meant for like, you know, a nice 90-minute or nice,
right.
you know, even 2 hours is kind of pushing it. But in the edit room, like we just really wanted to explore the characters and the story. And I remember seeing, I had an assistant editor who actually went out to LA and sat in with him for like, I don't know, like a week and a half. And we really worked hard on the edit. I think when I brought it to him, it was like 3 hours and we shaved it down to like 2.5 hours. And we could not get it down shorter than that until the full story in like a normal sort of breathable, because it's kind of gotta like, I guess, all sort of fit with each other. It's like a, maybe like the cadence of the entire thing has to like work together.
Right.
As opposed to just trying to meet certain minutes maybe. So the whole thing kept coming into like 2.5 hours. And so I brought it home and I was like, man, okay, how do we get this thing shorter? Because either we get it down to 2 hours or no one's going to release it probably at 2.5. And so I brought it
unless you're Ridley Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I brought it to Susanna, who was my wife at the time, and she basically is like a genius for structure, and she restructured the whole thing. You know, we were all working on the walls and putting up scenes and restructuring the whole thing. And it was her brain that kind of put it together, and now it's I can't even imagine it not being, I guess, in the form it is now. So yeah, that's the story on that.
You that's know, great. Yeah, that's excellent.
It's super secret, so don't go spreading it.
Okay.
Your secret's safe with us right here, between us.
Kevin and I are probably the only two people here old enough to remember when HBO came out. They would have some very long movies, and they would make an intermission.
Oh, wow.
They would add an intermission to it because you're watching this at home, because you had to get up and go use the bathroom, get some fresh snacks. And that was a very common thing back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That.
When you, and you didn't have the luxury of the pause remote to be able to make your own intermission.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say, first of all, taking a look at it, so far from what I have seen, I don't see a lot of fat in this show.
Great.
So I don't see how you could reduce this to under 2 hours or 2 hours and make it coherent. Or make it still, still a coherent narrative. And so I actually am impressed with the fact that you decided, no, let's not bother with that. Let's make this a limited series is what I call it. And let's make this the 8 episodes. You keep the episodes that usually, it seems like so far, the 26 to 30 minute length.
Yeah,
so these are in their own way rather easily digestible for for viewers and so forth, but yet you're telling this unfolding story. And I think it's kind of interesting that the way that you're unfurling the story is the way that the character is living it. That this is what's around this this corner. Well, one chapter ends, 30 minutes ends, he's got a next chapter to go to. And what's going to happen there? So you're kind of having it unfold as it's happening in the character's mind.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great assessment of that. I think in a way it is like kind of a hero's journey story. There's like a fun thing that you can do. Like if you ground something in a structure that's like a hero's journey, like people are kind of used to that now because Star Wars and everything. But like, if you do something like that, it kind of gives you liberty stylistically to really do some like trippy stuff. Whereas if the structure is like crazy, like a Memento or something, if you look at that movie, the style of it is like kind of normal. But I love leaning into the style sometimes, even over the, over the content. So this one's kind of a mix, I would say, in the middle of like content and form. But yeah, I don't know.
Right. Now I'm going to ask you, let's segue into the other Daniel, the Dwelvin, the Meister. Let's segue into him. Was Gar a character that you wrote and you just, I don't know how you connected with Daniel, but when you saw Daniel, that was Gar.
I think for Daniel Romer, you you two did a short film together. Previously.
I think Romer's. I thought you were.
He dropped off for a second, but yeah. I mean, I'm sure he can answer this, but yeah, I think he dropped off.
Nice save, Russ.
Oh, I thought you were.
That's the kind of guy Russ is.
Yeah, try, man.
You were like the same.
And he'll kill you too.
I got this. All right, let's go.
Well, like, so DeWeldon and I did this short film called The Select Fit, which was, it was very short. It was like 3.5 minutes. But it did very well. We qualified for Project Greenlight. I think it was something like 60,000 entries or something like that. We made it to like top 20. So, and that was a short. And DeWeldon played the main angel in it. There was two angels, and I played the guy that rewound the angels and like re-edited what they said and their motions. So it's kind of a similar concept. Almost exactly, but it's not very character driven. It's more like the concept driven. Anyway, that was where I wrote the part for Daniel, and the part, I think, was your name Madden in it? Or I think it was named Madden. Like I keep thinking there was a guy in college that I knew named Gar, and I always thought, oh, that's a cool character name. So I always, write it down. And then, in my mind, it's like DeWeldon kind of seems like a Gar, or he seems like a Madden, like a football, a lot of like powerful dialogue, Beastie Boys-y kind of energy. And writing the script.
Rage Against the Machine.
Eminem, like, I think I wrote it with your speech pattern in mind. It was quite a while ago when I wrote it, but I'm pretty sure I wrote it with you in mind, but I still had you audition.
Nice.
I remember he came into audition with these like boots on and his hair's all messed up. He just sits down, he's like this, he reads it, and it just blows it away, blows it out of the water, leaves. I was like, why did I even bring him in? It was perfect. Like, it might as well.
Of course he was going to do it.
I have never seen Daniel with a hair out of place. What are you talking about with this crazy hair and so forth? Never seen him with a... I swear he uses, like, at least a bottle of a product the day, to keep that hair in place.
Well, I wore a wig for the audition.
Okay. So when you talk, thanks Dan for describing that.
Dan didn't know it. He didn't know it.
Thanks for the description, because I just can't picture him with a hair out of place. But the one thing I got on Gar is what a damaged character. But then I started thinking, going back to when I first interviewed Daniel, was that I don't think he plays ordinary well. I think his characters have an edge to them, sometimes an extreme bloody edge, and I think that's where, as the actor in you, Daniel, I think that's where you kind of, I don't know you, but I think you kind of get off playing that kind of that character. And Gar is a damaged character. He's a guy that's living on stress's edge.
True
and,
story.
And he is not treating the people around him so well.
Hope that power doesn't fall into his hands. Man, that would be scary.
No, but I think he's on an edge. His character's on an edge just because society keeps beating him. And it's just his way of defense is trying to fight back. He's a guy that he's a guy that could be really charming at one minute and then boom, snap the next. And just start lashing out, which we see being talked about when there's a question of, well, one of the characters getting a black eye. But
he's the type of guy that if there's like a fly or a bee just flying around, he'll just like go like that super quick.
Just don't be near him in the scene, because you'd be like, oh!
talking about having him come in and read for this, I couldn't help but flash on, it was Shelley Winters, a very famous actress, at one point would still get asked to come in and read for a part, and she got kind of pissy about it. And finally she stopped that, but she'd come in and say, "You want my headshot?" And she'd pull out her Oscar and stick it on the table. There it is.
That's awesome.
So, I feel like at this point, I feel like at this point, Dwelden could do that. You know,
Shelley was my teacher.
We also
Oh wow!
Shelley Winters was one of my teachers before she passed away at the Actors Studio, and she was my neighbor. I never knew her as a neighbor. I only knew her from the Actors Studio. I never got to work with her in front of her, but she was there.
Right.
I got to work with a lot of really other fun. Big name people, but not her. She was the moderator, and she passed away. But she was a beast. And I waited on her one time in a restaurant in Santa Monica, and she was like the godfather. She was just so immersed in whatever was happening in the moment, and it was just ordering food. And she totally embraced me. She made me feel seen. Hey. Yeah, that's why she's such a good actress.
Come on, Daniel, but do some name drops. You also have been taught by Al Pacino.
Yeah. I dropped the ball that day.
Yeah, that's Jesus, man.
What about Charlie Dierkop?
Charlie Dierkop.
Kevin was supposed to interview him but Kevin had a tragic family issue, we understand. Don't want to that for that. But Charlie just passed away. He was Butch Cassidy's Sundance Kid and Police Woman, but another actress.
And I'll just tell you the side thing that Charlie, the phone conversation I had with him was just delightful. He was telling jokes and Lou Antonio the same way. But that's for a different, lot of Star Trek stories. Anyway, but.
Well, before we get too far off that, I really want to hear about Uta Hagen. What was she like to do work under or do?
Oh my gosh, she was a beast. She, when I first met her, I was doing a trade where I was, I had a driving service at the time, a car service, and I traded driving her around for free tuition, basically. And I remember the first day I met her, and I had this really nice car, and she came out with her assistant, and she was getting in the back seat, and she had a cigarette. And I said, "I'm sorry, Ms. Hagen, but you cannot smoke in my car." And she went, she let me have it. And I said, if I could change it, it would be different. She's like, okay. And she got in, and then we just bonded. We bonded because I felt like I stood up to her in a healthy way, and she respected it, you know? And so I became very close with her, not just as a student, but also her driver. But just an incredible experience. Yeah.
I think she recognized that you weren't a bullshitter.
Yeah, maybe.
That you weren't.
And I remember she said, "I'll see you again soon." And then she passed away like a couple of years later. So, but what an iconic interaction I had with her. But absolutely. She was a sweet lady.
You know, I have a late night horror show, and I go into the backgrounds of the people, and so many people, I have to tell you. And this actor had studied under Uta Hagen, and I've never got to talk to anyone that actually had to deal with her, got to deal with her in that fashion. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, she was no nonsense. She was very powerful. And I think just her presence made you want to do good for her. You know, she was like a general in the army or something.
You didn't want her to smack you on. Hey, did I say to do that?
Yeah. I'm from that generation. That doesn't. Yeah. That doesn't work anymore, but
I just reread Respect for Acting.
Oh, cool.
You know, I did. You know, you have to do that every once in a while. You just got to go back to some of the, and that is such a powerful book.
But you know, when really I got to the Actor's Studio, when I got to the studio, Russ, it was completely a different philosophy. So much so that Landau would even say, "I don't want any of that Uta Hagen stuff in here." And I was what? Like, this woman is she's more famous than you as a stage actor. You know, like, she was respect it, but Uta was big on when you rehearse that you actually bring in real props that you own to kind of personalize. And Marty Landau would want a, he wants a bare stage and nothing, not even a pencil, because he wants you to be able to slow down enough. You know, Russ works like this,
right.
To slow down enough that if you say that there's a leak coming out of the ceiling and we don't see it, but you're so connected to that leak that you believe it's leaking, so they'll believe it's leaking. But he didn't want to, he wanted the actors to be able to hone their imagination. So very different way of working. And so you can see it's like religion, you know, at the end of the day, all roads lead to God or lead to Rome or, you know, and so it's all a collective experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. That is awesome.
You guys talk about books. I'll stick with the Stanislavski's The Actor Prepare, An Actor Prepares.
An Actor Prepares, yeah. Or building a character, or even creating a role. Yes. I went back to building a character even recently and reread that book. And that's just an amazing, amazing book. You know, even though it's a series of three books, building a character is really important.
You really have to read all three. And that's what I did even before I interviewed Daniel, because I, you know, saw his resume and I knew what I was going to getting into. So I better refresh.
Oh, thanks, Kevin.
I better refresh my memory on that.
It's good.
And so, so it is. And it's exactly the whole, I just love this, you know, the whole, you know, thing about faces that that Stanislavski had. But anyway, we're digressing. So you guys are having what is next with the do you have to, is there more pitching that you have to do, or are you set with just Amazon Prime for this series? Is there going to be a
ton of you guys have had a really nice festival, and congratulations on the wins, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much, man.
Absolutely.
Will there be a follow-up? Will there be a season two or a series two on this? Or is this eight episodes and that concludes it?
I think Daniel Romer knows that not only is there more of a rollout, like there's AVOD and SVOD, we're only on the TVOD rollout, but if this does well, and Buffalo 8 is a major player in you know, in the game, that's the distribution company releasing this. We know that there may be a season two. We're just waiting to see. Yeah, just waiting to see.
So Russ, you are the reluctant action hero. You're the reluctant action hero, Russ. You know this. You know this.
I was going to say, if I had a moment that throughout the series, I'm about where Kevin is, and Russ, you exude such a vulnerability that it's so easy to fall into your character experience the emotions that you're experiencing. That's also
to
credit
behind,
to Daniel Romer. It all comes down to framing the shots. You have to, everything has to be set for the actor to do his thing. And both of them are well in sync. I wouldn't have been surprised if this wasn't streaming on Netflix. You know, it has that kind of cinematic quality. You know, Al, he loves the technical parts. Kevin loves the editing. I love the whole shebang. I love all of the details. I love the sound. I love the sound design. I love the framing, the pacing. I love giving the absolute biggest platform for the actors. So all they have to do is step on and just do their thing and everything just falls into place. So that's what Chaser has. And I'm excited to see how well everyone else takes it when it releases.
Very cool, man. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
And season two.
Did we lose Daniel Romer?
No, he's still here.
No,
okay.
He's here. Yeah, we're all here.
Because he can certainly speak to the fact that, I mean, Diego Madrigal was our cinematographer, and oh my God, his director of photography was something else. He became a great friend over that time too, but he was wonderful. So I'm glad to hear you say that. So we had so many people that, you know, that contributed to that yeah, look and feel.
Shout out to him. He like was a combo of like, I would say one of our top feedback, positive feedback that we've got. One of them is Diego Cinematography, and he did an amazing job. But one, I remember, like, as a director, you're casting the crew in addition to casting the actors.
Right. Absolutely.
So you're trying to put together a whole team that you know is right for the project you have and for the script that you have. So I remember understanding that I kind of needed a DP that was also like sharp and organized in addition to having a good eye. Cause we got some like amazing reels when I put out the ad, the publication that I was looking for a DP. We got some amazing ones and I talked to a few on the phone, but Diego was very like pragmatic. He just kind of like short and to the point. It was almost like he was an AD / cinematographer. Mm-hmm. Now it was just like, yeah. Somehow I feel like we need this on this production. And it turned out to be like
the second set of hands ever.
He was a no bullshitter. He was just like, wasn't he? Like,
yeah, incredible. Very meticulous. Yeah. Very meticulous.
Bro, and Joe, that level of detail, when you have someone behind the camera that's willing to put out the patience and frame it exactly how they want to frame it, while some actors might feel a little impatience, especially, you know, in other the cast and crew, like, let's get it done, right? We're on the clock here. Time is money. The detail it shows in the final product. I'm sure it began to show immediately in post production when you say this is crisp. You know, this is going to make it easier. So I don't have to worry less about doing this. I can worry more about doing this and bring that up. So yeah, that detail, it's not missed. It's very much appreciated, both I'm sure for Daniel Romer and for the audience. So it just helps with the immersion factor, really.
Yeah, and the DP really has to guard the shot while, you know, the director's trying to pay attention to the actors and, you know, all the other stuff that's happening, you know, all the kind of fires that are being put out and all that stuff. But, you know, everybody's really guarding their own thing, and he did a great job guarding the shot. Of course, all the actors have to stay in a very fertile spot to be able to guard their own performances as well.
Now, I got to ask, give a shout out for your female lead. Gia is just magnetic in this, and I was looking especially for her reactions once I got the idea that this was a story about re-editing of the main character's, you know, life, the mistakes that he's made, and re-editing of reality. I wanted to take a look at like her reactions when, like, for example, in the episode 2 when I saw when he starts, you know, trying to tell her, when he wakes up with her and they've slept together, and he's trying to say that we never did this. I met you at your place and you kicked me out and so forth. So and her reactions were kind of like, what's going on here? We had a relationship. I slept with you and now you're acting crazy. Gia was phenomenal. Can you talk just a little bit about casting of her and kind of your impression of her?
Yeah, that was like the most classic, like sort of dream scenario of like a casting that you hope for as a director. Cause like I sort of resolved to my producers unknowing that if, you know, if I didn't find the right actors for the part, like I wouldn't go into production, because I've made that mistake before where you like the shoot date's coming up and you're, oh shit, you know, we got to cast so-and-so and oh, they're not really right, but okay. Anyway, you fight that the whole shoot. But for this, I was like, no, this won't happen. I'm going to, even if it takes me a year, like Wes Anderson did with Rushmore, you know, he's going to spend, you know, he spent, I think it was like a year to get to where he finally got Jason Schwartzman. Anyway, that's what I'm doing. And so we went out to LA to cast, and finally, when Gia walked in, it was like instant, like, you like, that's Annabelle. And also I instantly felt like she had movie star quality. I was like, that's also a movie star. And that those were the thoughts I had, like, kind of simultaneously. And then after that, you're just kind of like testing the chemistry with the other people. So yeah, that was it for her. And she, I was also looking for someone that had like a kind of slight accent, like a maybe a French or some kind of European accent. And she also has that. She's from Canada and she speaks French, so she has that a little bit going on. I was like super stoked for that casting moment, because those are the kind of you like read about in the, you know, the books and see on the movies.
If you can you tell me, I always like to ask, what camera did you use for this, or do you remember?
Yeah, we shot on the Sony A7S.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it was a 4K upgrade. You can record on 4K. I think the camera is natively like 2K or 1080. But if you know, if you get the monitor, which Diego had the monitor, and he shot on that, so it's in 4K. And then the lenses, he used vintage Nikon lenses.
Okay.
I think they were like 35 millimeter lenses that he had an adapter for.
So those are very popular. So a lot of people like that look. So, and it did very well here.
Oh, so good.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
Cool.
So let's wrap it. Let's talk about where everyone can find Chaser and when.
Yeah, I mean, April 12th, Amazon, Vudu, Fandango, and all cable channels on demand.
We all are cable channels?
On demand.
Really?
So Fios, Xfinity, all of the Comcast.
Xfinity, nice. Nice.
Yeah, so you can find them everywhere cable is in the UK, US, and Canada for now.
And eggs are coming soon.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, congratulations on the series. It is an achievement. Oh.
Folks.
Go ahead, Kevin. Sorry.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Oh, he's saying season 2?
Oh, yeah. Kevin had technical issues. He wants season 2. Get through season 1 first.
Season 2.
Yeah,
season 2, guys.
Yeah.
We're hoping for it. We really are. It'd be so cool.
Whenever there's a technical difficulty, we always say Hal is screwing with reality. Hal is the guru. So anytime there's a freeze on this,
he's rewinding, you know, Kevin back. That's what he's doing.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah.
You rewind me back about 20 years.
I'll take that.
Until that happens, we just want to say, watch horror films, keep America strong, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.